Welcome to the 2AMT podcast. I'm David J. Lohr. Beth Burns is the artistic director of The Hidden Room in Austin, Texas. By her phrasing, a theatrical curiosity shop focused on audience experience. That focus is the prism that makes her current project truly fascinating. You Wouldn't Know Her, She Lives in London, / You Wouldn't Know Him, He Lives in Texas, opens on Saturday, March 5th, and takes place in Austin, Texas and London simultaneously via Skype video chat. It will also be streamed live to the internet so you can join in. Working with producing partner Look Left, Look Right Productions in London, and hosted in London by Roundhouse Theatre, this look at long-distance and cross-cultural relationships should have something that interests you whether you get to be in the room on either continent or only join in the stream. Beth sat down to talk with Travis Bedard for a few minutes this week.
This is Travis Bedard for 2AMTheater.com, and I'm talking today with Beth Burns with Hidden Room Theater here in Austin, Texas. She's about to open a show called You Wouldn't Know Her, She Lives in London. You Wouldn't Know Him, He Lives in Texas, this upcoming Saturday, which is live streamed between here in Austin, Texas, and the Roundhouse Theater in London. And we're going to talk to her about that process, how she came to it, and what she's getting out of it. So, Beth, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Hidden Room.
Sure. My background, I started off as an actor. I moved into directing and from there moved into playwriting. And then from there moved into improv. From there, I moved into Shakespeare and back to directing again. So basically, my career has been a series of, oh, my God, I know this is exactly what I want to do. I don't ever want to do anything else but this. And I feel like I found my calling, and then I find another one. The good news is that, once I came back to Austin, I found that I was sort of able to put all of those things together. That evil brew became the Hidden Room. So I started off as an actor, and then Jose Quintero came to our school, and who started Circle and Square in New York, and was the most amazing teacher I'd ever had. And I thought, oh, directing, I get it, this is it. And then Edward Albee came to our school, and I thought, well, I got to get in that class. So so I wrote a play for him, and he and I became good friends, and he was the best teacher I ever had. And he took me aside and he said, why are you wasting your time acting and directing? You're a far better playwright. And so I focused on playwriting. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I realized that acting and playwriting weren't really doing the trick for me. So I went to the Groundlings Theater, which is sort of this amazing hotbed of comic actors, where we get a lot of people who go to Saturday Night Live and Mad TV and such. And I thought, oh, cripes, McGipes, improv is it. I don't know why I've been wasting my time with this other stuff, and I'll never do anything else but be an improvisational actor. And so I focused on that. When I came back to Austin, because I had a daughter and she needed to go to a school and breathe clean air and such, I realized that Austin already had a real healthy improv scene and really didn't need some LA fancy pants from the Groundlings to come in and show them how it was done. And so I went back to my initial love, which had actually been Shakespeare, acting Shakespeare. And I found that with improv and playwriting and all these other backgrounds, that Shakespeare came really quite naturally, and that we sort of had a different approach to it. I also had been studying in the meantime, sort of for fun, the notion of original practice, and had been trying to do some scholarly work there, very poor scholarly work, because I'm certainly not an academic, but I'm academically curious. So I was studying that. And I think the biggest thing that the Groundlings brought me was a real appreciation for audience interaction, for connecting with your fellow actors and connecting with an audience in a way that brings them in. And so that's really what Hidden Room is very much about, is I'm calling it sort of a theatrical curiosity shop. And I'm saying that it really is honestly just there because I want to make a theatrical experience that starts as soon as somebody hears about the play, as soon as they know that it's going on, that the play starts then. and that they can be as involved in the community as they want to be, that we involve a lot of direct address with the audience. And we try to give them a unique experience that they can really feel fully involved in. That's really important to me. And in our productions that we've had so far, that's been the case. Tampering a little bit with the notion of the fourth wall, just like Shakespeare did. Tons and tons of direct address in Shakespeare. I'm a big fan of that. That was really sort of an eye-opener for me in terms of what makes theater really exciting and really pop out for me. Is when an actor looks me in the eye or addresses me or addresses the group, the community. And so that's something that the Hidden Room is playing around with. How do we build community? How do we let an audience not only feel like they're a community, but really be a community with us, enjoy this cathartic communal experience, which is what I think theater is meant to be. How can they enjoy it more actively and not have actors and producers and playwrights just pretend like they are feeling like they're part of something bigger than themselves? Let's actually make them a part of it. They don't have to, but it's available to them if they wish to seek it out.
What productions have you done with Hidden Room here in Austin?
I directed a few things in Austin before I started The Hidden Room that were mostly Shakespeare-based, and that was Twelfth Night and As You Like It for Scottish Rite. That was tons of fun. When I started Hidden Room, our first production out was The Taming of the Shrew Original Practices, and it was a long-held dream to have an Original Practices all-male Shakespeare. Again, with direct address, really high audience involvement, using extant music or period-appropriate music on period instruments with live musicians, universal lighting, and a real strict adherence to the text. And we did Taming of the Shrew. One other aspect about my background you should know is I'm actually also a women's studies minor. I loves me a man. I tell you what, I've been happily married for a long time, but I am, I do fall into the category of radical feminism, actually, which sounds scarier than it is. I was really curious about Shrew. In my studies of it, I kept scratching my head and saying, you know, I think I've seen all these interpretations that it's such this, you know, beating this poor woman into submission. I wonder what it would be like if we had all men in this production. And then the more I, you know, as it was intended to be, and then the more I studied the play, I realized, oh, this play actually isn't sexist at all. I think there's been, you know, sort of this tradition of it being sexist, but, you know, a line like any can be interpreted a lot of different ways. Just when you're reading an email and all of a sudden it goes into all caps, it could be that person meant they were excited and not furious. And I think we tend to read the most negative things possible in it. But I just kept thinking, gosh, why would the man that wrote Viola and wrote Rosalind and wrote Beatrice and Eleanor and all these amazing characters, why would he write this one character that really just needs a smackdown from a man and that's going to solve everything? It just didn't make sense. It didn't ring true. He's so concerned with parity. He's so concerned with equality of the sexes, and he talks about it constantly. Why would he write this one just desperately sexist play? It didn't make sense. And then, as I said, upon further investigation, we found that, in my opinion, actually, no, the play is another call for parody and another call for not labeling people by their appearance or their skin or their gender, which I think Shakespeare was concerned with, but rather allowing or encouraging people to label themselves as they wish. It is the blessed moon, because I say so. So we did that production. And we did after that, we followed it up with a co-production with Trouble Puppet Theater called A Most Unsettling and Possibly Haunted Evening in the Parlor of the Brothers Grimm, which was our Halloween show that was dedicated to celebrating the darkest of the Brothers Grimm tales. And we set it in a mysterious, very seemingly haunted parlor, and the audience got to come in and be greeted by Wilhelm Grimm and his servants, who were actually Trouble Puppet Theater in disguise, who then, upon Wilhelm's command, created these puppets out of things that happened to be lying about on the table. A really ornate coffee pot, when turned upside down, became an old woman. A napkin with the cap of a creamer became a young girl. It's just really beautiful work, and some really creepy tales that I think were indeed unsettling. And then that brings us to the production that we're at now. So this is number three for us, and we're really proud of where we've been going with it so far. And Austin's been really nice and has given us all sorts of recognition and awards, which is really just icing. We're really pleased.
Well, how do you get from scholarly original practices, Taming of the Shrew, and found object puppetry, Night of Brothers Grimm tales, to an international live streaming show with London, Texas?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think the as far as how I got there, the common thread goes back to the idea of community building. It goes back to the idea of reaching out to an audience and bringing them in. I wanted to be able to learn from other theater companies. I wanted to be able to learn from other actors and other directors. I was really curious about what they were doing in London, because they're doing some really great site-specific stuff there, which I'm really fascinated by and want to play around with more. They're also doing documentary theater, which is what our current collaborators are working on, this verbatim documentary theater based on important occurrences that happen in the UK. So much cool stuff. And I thought, how can I learn from these guys? How can I share information with these guys? And I mean, obviously there's certainly the more selfish object of how do I make our community bigger? How do I share our stuff with people, as many people as possible?
Yeah.
And get it out there and then get the feedback and see what we can do, share Austin theater with other places. And, you know, bands do it all the time. Bands get to go travel, but theaters don't. We tend to do these one-offs where we work really hard for 3 months and then we put up a show for 8 times and then we kiss it goodbye and it's gone. And it just doesn't seem sustainable, you know? It doesn't seem... And we're sad. I think that's why we get the post-show blues so hard. We all cry and hug each other and say goodbye. Well, why do we do that? You know, Shakespeare didn't do that. They had their troop of guys and they'd say, hey, what do you want to see tonight? A romance or a drama? You know, what do you want? We've got it in our back pocket. Anyway, I've digressed. But the point is, I wanted to be able to go and try and share theater in other ways with other cultures, other communities. And London seemed like a really great way to start because, A, they don't seem all that different from us, and it seemed like a good place to start. And, B, I was just really curious about what they were doing. Well, then the second problem comes up, how do you afford it? How do you afford to do theater? I cannot possibly spend as many months as I would need to away from my family. I'd prefer not to be flying back and forth. I can't afford to send actors out there. What do I do if I want to do theater? And I thought, well, I just talked to my buddies who are in London on Skype, so why can't I just make some Skype theater?
Nice.
And it just seemed like the right thing to do. It seemed like an easy way to share. The last little bit was that I became really quite curious in the time that I had spent in London about how complicated US-UK relations actually were that I was not aware of. It seemed like we were such great buddies and everything was cool on our end, but on their end, they weren't as cool with us as I thought they'd be. And I thought, well, you know, hey, you know, the politics thing, that aside, but no, that there were all sorts of issues with them that they had a lot of very thoughtful ideas about that I was just sort of like, oh, hey, man, isn't everything cool? And then they would go off on a very thoughtful diatribe about why things weren't cool. and so I thought that was something that could really stand addressing. So I wrote a piece about a long-distance couple, hoping to, in a subtle way, address some of these differences and see what I could do to explore them a little bit in sort of a fun way that might help Americans scratch their heads a little bit and wonder about what we could do to improve one of the most important relationships we have, and maybe let the Brits have their say a little bit. What it ended up being was actually more of more of a discussion and exploration of what it actually means to have a relationship at all. And I think there's so many people right now who really have this relationship going on, a long distance relationship overseas. There's a lot of people who cannot be together, and yet we have this amazing technology that links us. And they're using it as effectively as they possibly can. And since that is so real, it became a more and more interesting question to me, especially when I found my London collaborators, who I met from a friend of a friend, and we only ever dealt with each other online.
Nice.
So we ourselves had a very tenuous relationship. We didn't know whether or not we could trust each other. We didn't know anything about each other. And yet, over the months, as our relationship has developed, I can say quite confidently, she's one of the most lovely people I've ever met. She's absolutely wonderful to work with. It's been a real match made in heaven. And I do trust her, and she does trust me. And I can tell you verifiably our relationship is real, despite the fact that most of our interactions take place in the Ethernet.
So I'm talking with Beth Burns of the Hidden Room Theater here in Austin, Texas. She's about to open a show. You wouldn't know her. She lives in London. You wouldn't know him. He lives in Texas. That opens this Saturday in Austin and in London and online. She was just talking about a relationship that she had with her producing partners at the Roundhouse in London, whose existence is mostly mythical, being on the internet. There are lots of folks who feel like the technology has a distancing effect, and that creating theater via technology makes it something other than theater. Have you found that to be the case? Have you found that it is radically different from any other type of show you've done?
Well, it is different than any other show I've ever done. But what's been wonderful is my technology designer, Robert Matney, has been working tirelessly to try to make sure that at least the technology part of it, that those potential gaps are bridged. And he's really come up with some ingenious ways. And we've realized as we've been going through, we did some checking into who else is doing this kind of work. We looked into it pretty hard, and we found some similar things, but we hadn't found exactly what we were doing. And I kept scratching my head and going and wondering why, and then actually being fearful about it, thinking, gosh, maybe it's actually not possible. I can't imagine why nobody else has done this. I think the reason why nobody else has done it is because you are correct. It is difficult. It's not a cakewalk as I had thought it would be up at the top. But that said, I think we have come up with certain structures that really do make it feel very much like a regular, you know, a standard theatrical process. We do warm-ups with each other. We have a script. We have an audience, a live audience on both sides. We do the best that we can to make it work. And we do feel connected, and we think that the audience feels connected as well. And I think connection and relationship really does make theater theater. And it doesn't necessarily matter where you are, as long as you make the connection.
Are there ideas or themes in that long-distance relationship, cross-cultural relationship that you're exploring? Were there themes that became difficult to express because you weren't ever in the same room?
I think what actually happened is that themes became more readily available to us because we weren't in the same room. The feeling of disconnect, the questions about why it is that we choose to connect with anyone, especially when it's difficult, the questions about what makes a relationship real. Is my relationship with my family less real when I go out of town? Is my relationship with these people less real because we only see each other this way? and it actually, I think, brought things to the surface that were sort of bubbling underneath otherwise, and it was in rehearsal that things became more clear to us. So I've actually been quite grateful for that, being able to ruminate on that, those things that are important.
Well, and you sort of literalized that disconnect, didn't you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, that was the shot. I mean, one of the things we realized is that just in all relationships, you're going to have moments of disconnect. And it was interesting to actually be ready to incorporate what will probably be inevitable technology fails and use that to our advantage. This is just another one of the problems with relationships in general. Sometimes you cannot be there. Sometimes you do have a disconnect for whatever reason, but you work past it. And just because you have disconnects or just because something's difficult doesn't mean it's not worth trying. And I think that just because you have a relationship that's via Skype, it's better to have something, even though it is difficult, than to have nothing at all. And I think we should be really grateful for the technology that we have available to us. Rather than poo-pooing it, I've met the most amazing people that I never would have met otherwise had it not been for Skype or other video teleconferencing. And some chutzpah from Look Left, Look Right in London. And then, thank goodness, the Roundhouse also took care of us. But it's really Look Left, Look Right and Mimi Poskett and The Hidden Room and myself being willing to trust each other enough and trust some pixels on the other end of the line and know that just because it looks like a picture and some pixels, that's still a human being. They are all the way over there, but they're still real. And I will get their back, and she's got mine.
How in the world, with the time difference, how do you structure rehearsals? How do you find a couple of hours together to get rehearsal done? And then what's it like giving direction only over video chat?
Okay, well, that it's not easy. We rehearse on weekends primarily, and we are rehearsing earlier for this show than I have ever rehearsed for any other show in my life. And as you know, actors are usually not early birds, so it's not been easy. Tomorrow I have a 5 a.m. rehearsal with London. I will be connecting with them at 5 for a 5 to 5:10 hello, how do you do, and a 5:15 warm up, and then a couple of runs of the show so we can gear up for opening day. So yeah, weekends, early times. And as far as notes, Mimi and I divided things up so that I'm her eyes and ears on this side, she's my eyes and ears on that side. I'm directing as best I can Judd Ferris here in town, who's a wonderful actor, and I'm also giving her notes on things that I see on the screen. Hey, Mimi, that's out of frame. If he could come two more steps to the left, he's coming across perhaps more vicious than you mean him to because of the screen. I'm seeing the eyes through the filter of the screen for her, and she does the same for me. Other than that, we try and kind of stay respectful of each other's direction. It's a co-direction in the pure sense of the word.
That's been super difficult.
Luckily, she and I have similar tastes.
Co-direction's hard enough when you're both in the same room and you can go out for a beer afterwards. I can't imagine, being separated by an ocean and, several time zones and trying to work that out.
Yeah, we set up parameters for each other early on as far as what was okay and what wasn't, and we gave ourselves very assigned roles. We've stuck to those roles, and luckily we respect each other, and I think that's really what it's all about. Just like I think a co-production or, a co-director gig would be in person. You really have to set boundaries that are respectful for each other and be ready to support, even if you don't agree, just like parenting. You're making your theater baby, grow up healthy.
Okay, so you open up on Saturday, the 5th.
That's right.
At 2 p.m. Austin time and 8 p.m. London time.
That's right.
I know there's a Twitter hashtag, Texas London, that folks can check in on. Are there other ways we can interact with the show? Go ahead and talk about that.
Absolutely. There's a couple of different ways. We have Facebook pages up, first of all, for the event. Here in Austin, it's called You Wouldn't Know Her, She Lives in London. There in London, it's called You Wouldn't Know Him, He Lives in Texas. You can check out the event pages for both of those, and you can befriend our fictional long-distance lovers, Ryan Peterson and Elizabeth Watson. They will interact with you, although they will probably have less time to interact with you as we head into opening. But you can... they will interact with you, and you will become their friends and family, somebody that, one of the other of them knows or has met or is happy to see. So the show can begin now for you in that respect. Secondarily, you can watch the live stream at www.roundhouse.org.uk at the appropriate time. And then, again, you will be watching as the friends and family of this couple, and they'll encourage you to check in and say hi. And if you have questions or comments or thoughts or advice, they encourage it. And your tweets will go up on the screen live. Luckily, there's a filter on the Roundhouse side. We're deciding whether or not to have a filter on my side. I don't think we need one. It's an adults-only show, you know. Whatever. You know, as long as they're not like, Beth Burns has stupid ideas, then everything is fine.
I have to set that up. I have to find a way to get that posted up.
Stop making theater, Beth Burns. Boo.
Who thought this would be a good idea? That Beth Burns.
Yeah, as long as it's not that, I don't care what goes up there.
So you wouldn't know her. She lives in London. You wouldn't know him. He lives in Texas. Is opening this Saturday, March 5th, in Austin and London and online. And you can check that out. I'll provide the links in the post that accompanies this. Beth, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
You Wouldn't Know Her, She Lives in London, / You Wouldn't Know Him, He Lives in Texas, opens on Saturday, March 5th and runs for 2 weekends. To watch online, visit www.roundhouse.org.uk. You can also follow the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag #TexasLondon. Of course, you can get social with us at 2 AM Theater by following the hashtag 2AMT. You can also follow us at 2AMT on Twitter. And of course, visit the website 2AMTheater.com. Feel free to join the conversation. You've been listening to the music of Tamara Deering. I'm David J. Lohr. Tune in again next time for more Thinking Outside the Black Box from 2AM Theater.